Hey, Jungle Babies. Just before we start the show, I wanted to just throw a little ad in, so bear with me for 1 second. On Thursday, the 13th of August, at the Hayden Orpheum Cinema in Sydney, myself and Ben Elwood from the Wise Cats podcast are hosting a screening of Tom Hooper's Dada Nightmare Spectacular Cats. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Cats is finally taking its rightful place back up on the silver screen. And who better to host it than Ben and I, who spent 8 hours or so discussing why the film is a particular blend of genius and horrifying hellscape. It's a fucking crazy movie. If you live in Sydney or around Sydney and you haven't seen Cats on the big screen, come and watch it with us. It'll be so much fun. We're going to encourage heckling. You're allowed to laugh. You can sing along if you want. You can cry. You may get selected for the Jellicle Ball. And if you're lucky, we will let you kill yourself and then you'll ascend to heaven or whatever that movie's about. That's a pretty dark ad to throw at the start of this podcast. Anyway, come along and watch it on the 13th of August if you're in Sydney. If you're not in Sydney, I'm sorry. And hopefully when all of this is over, we can come to you and screen it for you there soon. Thanks, babies.
Sans Pants Radio, Australia's least coherent podcast network.
There's one that's on these IMDb quotes that's just cracking sound is heard. Ah, my legs.
Welcome to the island of Total Reboot. Just off the coast of California, we are a strongly matriarchal society, and we're pagans. We worship the gods of movies. And you're invited to stick around and, geez, Louise, hope we don't sacrifice you.
Yeah, and if we're sacrificing you, it is for the good of movies. So yeah. We can get a new harvested crop of wonderful flicks throwing some of your favorite stars like Lily Sobieski. and other forgotten stars.
Other people who I can't remember who are in this
movie. We're going to be Ellen bursting onto the scene with some wonderful flicks later this year.
We're in the middle of our Locked in the Cage anniversary special.
We're not even in the middle of it anymore.
We're towards the end of it.
We've reached the zenith, if you will.
We've reached the zenith.
Which is, of course, one of the names of Nicolas Cage's children, I would assume.
We've gone through quite a journey looking at Nick's flicks over the last little while. We started with a young man who showed talent, showed promise.
Yes.
And we watched him either squander it or exceed it.
Yeah.
It's really still hard to tell.
Mm-hmm.
This movie, though, is probably the deciding factor. I think
absolutely
you can watch this movie and we have.
We have watched it.
And we need to decide now, is Nick Cage absurd black comedy genius? Mm-hmm. And when I say that, you probably... You're only picturing like Martin Lawrence.
Martin Lawrence, Chris Rock. It was just the way that you delivered one word.
One of the ways is...
Yep.
No. That's
and
not,
I can actually not... unequivocally say no. Nicolas Cage is not a black comedy genius.
But is he a black comedy genius?
We don't know. That's what we're going to have to discuss today.
Or is he really bad at doing dramas?
Mm. We, of course, are Total Reboot. We're talking about a little movie that was a remake of a wonderful English film called The Wicker Man. And we are, of course, talking about The Wicker Wicker Man, which is the new hip-hop remake of The Wicker Man.
Which was made in 2006 at the prime peak of hip-hop and DJ culture.
Yes, it was, of course, influenced by that. As you can tell from watching this movie, it goes hand-in-hand with hip-opera and the like. It has been really interesting looking at Nicolas Cage's career through the lens of these remakes because we can literally compare him every time to what a more nuanced performance of the character is, except for maybe Bad Lieutenant.
And you know, yeah, true. But you know what, though? I feel like nuance is not something that he's interested in.
Yes.
I think we've come to learn that over this series. It's more broad expressionistic strokes is something that he finds fun and enjoyable to do.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it really works.
Absolutely.
Sometimes it doesn't. It really worked in Bad Lieutenant,
yes.
I think.
Absolutely. He's phenomenal in it. It's such an exciting performance, and it's extremely hilarious. The guy's a black comedy all-star.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a king. He's one of the kings of comedy.
He is one of the kings of comedy.
The original kings
he
of comedy.
He ain't scared of you motherfuckers.
And you might be scared of him, but he ain't scared of you motherfuckers.
This one, though, we watched it with our Patreon group and we were making fun of it the whole way through because I think as a film, it's stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And you're allowed to make fun of it.
You're allowed to make fun of movies.
It sucks.
Guys, we are critics. We're allowed to make fun of movies, okay?
Yeah.
We've worked in film. We've made short films and we've worked in comedy. Therefore, we're allowed to freaking make fun of movies and piss them off.
And
do a
couple
of
video
mistakes.
Shop.
I've worked in a store that freaking lent out DVDs, digital video discs, digital virtual discs, but we just
digital
use the videos.
Versatile discs.
Yeah, virtual discs.
Digital virile dicks.
Digital virile dicks. That's kind of like a male phallus that one might bring up. And we're talking about the Wicker Wicker Man.
Yeah, we'll get to that in the future. So, yeah, we are allowed to make fun of him. You're allowed to make fun of this movie. It is incredibly stupid, but I think that I have decided to view Nicolas Cage's performance in this film as absurdist black comedy on purpose.
Yes.
I think he knows what he's doing.
I think so.
I think he knows it's silly. He knows it's funny. I wouldn't be surprised if he was the one who said, my character's last name should be Malice because it's a portmanteau of male and phallus.
Of course, the male phallus is known as the pindic or the penile area.
Or the chode.
The chode, if you will. It is a part of a man that is at times floppy.
And at times incredibly stiff.
And upright. Erect, if you will. So it is a very powerful area of the male body.
And it's a very powerful name, Malice. Because it's a combination of the male phallus together and it makes you think, this man, whose last name is Malice, must be incredibly strong, brave, and cool.
And he must be packing a big old lump.
And then you find out
he's got a big old mound underneath
those
pants.
Big old freaking pack of beans down there. Big old sack.
A good old sack of mound. One sack to the left and one sack to the right. And one gorgeous center sack.
Which way do you dress, Mr. Cage? You dress to the left or the right? I dress all around. I got a huge lump down there and it cannot be avoided. It doesn't go to the left or the right. It just sticks outward. It protrudes.
It's a protruding lump.
And it's huge and it will make you feel feelings. Every feeling you can imagine.
It will rock your mind and break your soul.
Don't look into its eye.
It might not even have one.
We don't know yet. We don't know
it's
what.
It's got a little eyeball that's hidden beneath the lid.
So, I think that's a very powerful name. And I think it's
awesome.
It feels like
it's
his decision.
It also sounds like Malice.
Yeah. So, there's double thing there because it's like male phallus, which
there's
is cool.
There's double thing there, double thing down there as well, from what I understand.
And Malice is also a very, it's a very
it's an exciting word. It means like malicious. And it sounds awesome. Like Alice from the Brady Bunch.
Oh, I was thinking Alice from Wonderland.
Yeah.
You know, who tumbles down the rabbit hole and then finds herself in a world of people who are fucked up and weird.
I was thinking more like a lady who like cleans the house for this family that has like two sets of daughters and like one set of brothers and stuff. And like she's like kind of sassy and stuff. That's what when I hear Malice, I think of Alice from the Brady Bunch. A housekeeper.
Okay.
Well, that's just different to what I think, and that's fine.
That's what film's all about, interpreting things differently.
Yeah, and I mean, I wish this film had the opportunity to go through that, but unfortunately, this film, according to the trivia section on IMDb, was not screened for critics.
So we had to put our own screening on, because like we said, we are critics. They didn't screen it for us, so here we are, 15 or so years later, putting on a screening for ourselves.
And we had a bunch of critics, that's you guys, watching along as well and making your own criticisms. And I think it's fair that we now take a moment to dive into this movie and air our criticisms of it.
Edward, I know that we haven't spoken in a few years. I need your help.
I need your help.
I have a daughter. Her name is Rowan. She has been missing for 2 weeks now. I fear she is in danger, so now I turn to you. Be careful and believe nothing that you see or hear.
Lost your bearings?
Oh, hey, sorry. Snuck up on me there.
This is private property.
Do you know her?
I don't recognize this child.
Welcome. My little girl is still here. She has been taken by who I don't know.
I'll find her.
If she existed, we would know of her.
Whose desk is this,
Rowan? Hello?
You suspect foul play.
Hey! Wicker Man returns.
Who's the Wicker Man?
I'm gonna search every inch of this town.
She'll burn to death. She burned to death.
I need your help.
Daddy.
The Wicker Wicker Man from 2006, directed by Neil LaBute. Ye beauty. Some sacrifices must be made. A sheriff investigating the disappearance of a young girl from a small island discovered there's a larger mystery to solve among the island's secretive neo-pagan community.
Neo-pagan?
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's like you can see code.
You can see code and you can see chode.
Neil LaBute is a director.
An iconic filmmaker.
We all love. We've all loved all his work so far.
He has worked in many different types of film, including black comedies like The Wicker Wicker Man and black comedies like Death Film at a Funeral.
He's made some great stuff like you probably all remember Nurse Betty. We loved that. The movie that single-handedly tanked Renee Zellweger's star power. And then Lakeview Terrace, the movie that is one of many Samuel L. Jackson movies that doesn't exist.
Yeah, I do remember that one, and I did like it when it came out.
I never saw it, but I saw the front cover of it a lot at the video shop.
Yeah, it was a real... That's why I saw it, because I worked at a video store when it came out.
It's a real video store.
Yeah.
Exclusive.
It's exclusive.
Released exclusive to shelves.
Mondo Movies Annandale had the exclusive rights to Lakeview Terrace.
But if you open the case, nothing inside.
Yeah,
it was released exclusively to Synopsis on the back of a DVD cover.
Because no one rented it. It was a scam that we had running to fill the shelves out. We just invented that poster, put it on the shelves.
Even Sam Jackson's like, yeah, probably. Yeah, probably might have been in that.
But he started his career out with the film called In the Company of Men, right?
Yeah.
Is that based on one of his plays?
I think it's based on a play. That was kind of his big breakout piece. It has our friend in it.
Mr. Harvey Dent, Aaron Eckhart.
Yeah, Mr. Aaron Eckhart, who is also in a million films that don't exist.
Mm.
And isn't that fucked up?
Yes.
He's a good actor.
And he was a handsome young fella.
He was a handsome guy. He's got a beautiful lump down there. We don't know what it looks like.
We don't know what it looks like. We can only speculate. We can only speculate. If an actor has not shown his fronts on a film, we can only speculate that it is an amorphous lump.
Yeah.
That's why Harvey Keitel was one of the most beloved stars, because we know what
it
is.
We finally saw what he was working with and we respected him for it.
Mm,
Aaron Eckhart has kept that schwanz covered up. And that's fine in its own way, but for guys like us, we need to know. We need to know the answer.
We need to know. We're critics after all.
So he was great. And then he had, like, he really hit his peak with The Dark Knight. And you think, okay, this guy's going somewhere.
I remember seeing him in The Dark Knight going, like, this guy is going to be a megastar. This guy is our new Robert Redford.
Yeah, Robert Redford.
And I thought he was going to really burst out onto the scene.
But tragically, he is... He's one of those dudes who's in the Lakeview Terraces of the world.
Yeah. He's in I, Frankenstein and stuff like that.
Brutal, brutal, brutal. I'm not a big Neil LaBute fan. I don't like his writing. Mm-hmm. I think it's... he kind of got known for doing this, like, mammothy, apparently satire of, like, toxic masculinity. Like, in The Company of Men is that. It's all just boys talking about... Oh, fucking women and all this shit and schwanzes what their lumps look like.
We don't like that kind of stuff.
We think that's gross and embarrassing.
That's why we make fun of that culture.
Yeah,
like, talk about lumps and stuff like that.
We make fun of it. So I was happy to see that Neil LaBute stepped away from the world of toxic masculinity and into the world of toxic femininity for this film.
Yes. Good on him. He's stretching his wings, stretching that good old lump of his out, forming it up into something.
We should talk about the main differences between this and the original, which we liked.
Yes.
I guess the main one that stands out is that this is... The first one was a film about religion, like old religion versus Christianity, Catholicism,
and like
which is relatively new.
Being confronted by it.
Yeah.
And feeling
having
out
your
of
faith
place.
Challenged.
Yeah. I think that it's a really, really strong movie about having your faith challenged and being brought into like this kind of more medieval world in a way.
Yeah.
But also the surprises of that. Like, you know, the original movie, when he goes to this island, it just looks like a regular British Isle, like Postman Pat. It's gorgeous. Everyone is dressed kind of normally. The women are beautiful. The men are weird looking, like every British Isle.
Everyone's dressed to the fours.
Yeah.
You know, people dressed to the nines and they're looking good.
They're just kind of smart casual. They're dressed to the fours.
They're dressed to the fours. Except for Lord Summer Isle, who's probably dressed to the sevens. He looks pretty good.
He looks good. He's wearing he's rocking a turtleneck and he's wearing a blazer over the top. Classic look.
It's a good look. He looks great.
But he's not up to the nines. He's got fucking weird hair.
Yeah, exactly.
If he smoothed it out, he'd be reaching an eight.
Yeah, big time. The hair definitely takes him down a notch. This movie, though, is not about faith. It's not about religion at all. The message of this movie, I think, from watching it, is that women are evil and that men are innocent and that women are fucked and they do horrible things to manipulate men.
That is a strong reading of this film, and it is actually very hard to deny that's what the intentions of this movie are, because it is all about like the gender divide, which I think for a movie like this, it seems really reductive to have gone from like this really strong and rather unique theme of old religion versus new religion as far as like an investigative horror movie goes, to then bring that to being like this men and women are different and there's persecution involved in it for this kind of horror movie.
But to be fair, men and women are different is a key theme of black comedy.
Yes, it's true. So maybe that's where he's getting confused with what he should be doing with this movie.
Yeah.
But watching it, it's like it doesn't connect at all, because it's a far less nuanced and interesting theme. And it doesn't really hold water in this movie at all. Like, it is interesting that they've gender swapped the Lord Summer Isle to now no longer be played by Christopher Lee, but to be played by like one of the all-time great stars, Ellen Burstyn. And I think that is an interesting choice, but there is like this whole like, I mean, to evoke imagery that is in this movie, there's this whole honeypot trap thing about this movie where the plot is that Nicolas Cage has been tricked into this island, and no longer it's like, it's not just in the original one, he's a cop who has been enlisted to specifically
find
to find a missing girl. This time it's like, this time it's personal, is as they would say, where he is directly involved with the plot of the film and directly involved with this murder mystery or this missing child mystery, in that he has been requested by his ex-lover to help find her daughter that he didn't know
about. Which could be his daughter.
It could be his daughter. And
First, big difference in mm-hmm. the first one, he is a virgin.
Yes.
In this one, we have proof that he has blown his beans.
Because he thinks it could be mine.
He thinks it could be mine, which so implies therefore to me that he's definitely had an orgasm inside of a woman, which is awesome.
It's not Lily Sobieski, but another woman.
Another woman, yeah.
Yeah, this cast really cool. Apart from Nicolas Cage and Ellen Burstyn, this cast has zero star wattage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, big time.
Negative voltage. But it is Kate Behan who plays this character, who is an Australian. She was born in Perth, Western Australia, the home of Todd Noy. So it's not just that as well. There's like a cold open to this movie now.
Oh, yeah.
Which is bizarre. It is so weird where it's like him at a diner or whatever. And then he goes out on the road because he's a freaking cop.
He's a freaking road cop.
This young woman and her daughter are on the side of the road. And he's like chatting to them. And then a truck is about to blow them away. And he feels responsible for this girl's death.
So, yeah, the girl, I can't even remember. It was so... It appeared so many times throughout mm-hmm. the movie, but does the girl get out of the car or something? The truck just hits the car.
But then it's kind of like, was there even a girl in the car or something? But he's now has PTSD and has been taking time away from work to recuperate and like learn to live what he has done or what he has not done.
And he has awful decor in his house.
Awful shit house.
Awful house. Awful decor.
Very beige browns.
Brown tones.
Tea colors everywhere.
Disgusting wood paneling. No, disgusting like vinyl, brown vinyl lounge.
Brown vinyl lounge. It looks gross. Disgusting. Everything is cafe colored.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything is coffee, cafe, and mocha are the tones of this room.
It makes me sick.
It looks like he's living in a freaking Makona coffee jar right now, dude. It doesn't look good. And if you're trying to recover and recuperate yourself from
put a
tragic
color up.
Yes, open the freaking window. Open the blinds. Go walk around instead of cooping yourself up in this disgusting little jar of instant coffee beans.
I hate people's houses.
Yeah, same. Light them up. Put some white walls up.
Yeah, get some Scandinavian. Art.
Get some minimalist Scandinavian shit. Go a little bit mid-century with your stuff.
Yeah, pick some antiques that you like and don't just get shit that you inherited from your house. A fucking lazy boy? Come on, dude.
Come on, dude. You're a lazy boy when it comes
to
freaking
really
design.
You're a lazy boy.
I heard this wonderful thing from Oprah Winfrey many years ago that has been stuck in my head.
Oprah who?
Oprah Winfrey.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yes, my wife, Oprah. Where she was talking about design and decorating a house, and she said, what you should do is you should pick one gorgeous little item and have that be the item that you style the rest of your room around.
Yeah.
And she says, don't make it the centerpiece. Don't pick like a giant fucking table or a big clock or something like that. It should be something small that should influence the rest of your house. In my house, I have a beautiful antique lamp. That's three goddesses holding up an orb. And that's how I've used that as my centerpiece item. It's not a centerpiece. It's just to the side that then informs the rest of the style. Nicolas Cage, get something fun for that and then design around it.
Nicolas
so
Cage's centerpiece is a brown vinyl lazy boy. And then everything else that he's surrounded with is tacky.
Invisible floating dust.
Fucking laminate table. Dog shit. And yeah, you're right. Visible floating dust like he's in the Upside Down and shit.
Yeah, exactly.
It's disgusting.
It's disgusting. You're going to freaking sneeze
and
in there,
dude. A cop comes and says, your place is gross. You're clearly depressed. Yep. You need to get out of your fucking sorrows.
Yeah.
I'm sending you on a journey to a beautiful holiday island resort off the coast of California.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have a great time. P.S. You'll also be solving a murder of a young girl. I hope that doesn't trigger you.
I hope that doesn't trigger you after that's what you've been in, but you've been specifically requested by an ex of yours to solve this mystery.
Yeah, so get your ass up Highway 1 and get on a freaking biplane.
Yep.
And say bye, mainland.
By mainland.
And High Island.
You're going to be on High Island and it is going to be stunning once you arrive. It's going to be gorgeous woodland area.
Big Sur.
Absolutely, it's Big Sur where you're going to. And Sir.
Tahoe.
Sir, you're going to freaking love it. Bigly.
Yeah. So yeah, the main difference obviously is the gender swap of this. And Ellen Burstyn is great. She's awesome.
She's actually excellent in this movie.
She's not really in it that much though.
No, but just like Jaws, while he doesn't too much in it, you feel his presence throughout, and you just see those hints of Ellen Burstyn.
Yeah.
But I think that she is just as good as that iconic Christopher Lee performance in the original, where they both carry a lot of a certain je ne sais quoi, but a lot of restrained power in the way that they deliver their performance and a restrained use of status. And I think that Ellen Burstyn is, of course, one of the iconic screen queen horror stars of all time. We're talking about the freaking Exorcist, okay, baby?
Yeah.
And she, having her in this role of an iconic horror character from an iconic horror film in a remake is very smart casting. To have another iconic horror star in that role, but completely different to Christopher Lee. This is someone that's not really known for playing the villains. To have her in that is really clever casting. So hats off to Neil LaBute. You got a win in this book from me.
Interestingly, a lot of the scenes from the original are kind of done almost word for word in this one. I really assumed we'd be getting a lot more modern 2006 references. Like they'd be talking about fucking Limp Bizkit and stuff like that.
Yeah, you hear that Conan is like going to take over Tonight Show one day.
Yeah, there'd be stuff like that. Did you hear about the Leno-Conan beef?
Yeah, there's like Leno might not want to give up what he's got, but Conan is still owed the Tonight Show. People talk about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, or like the Killers would be on the soundtrack or something like that.
I thought that would be it. I thought there would be a little bit of Arctic Monkeys or something like that.
Franz Ferdinand, maybe.
Franz Ferdinand would have been excellent on this album. If when they were flying the seaplane in, you could hear...
Take me out. Oh, I love these Franz Ferdinands.
You know, Franz Ferdinand is actually based on the guy that was killed before World War One.
He got shot in the head.
Should we talk?
I'd like you, first of all, to read this scene that is straight from the original.
Yes,
but is also here again in the remake.
Yes,
have you got it in front of
me? I've got it in front of me. This is a scene in the original movie where they have. He is investigating in the classroom, right?
Yeah.
In the classroom, asking questions to all the little children about their missing person, who is Rowan.
Rowan, a young girl who they all deny knowing, even though there is an empty desk in the classroom, which he supposes.
Well, the desk isn't empty. He opens up and a crow flies out of the desk.
In the original, there's a bug in there that's tied to a string.
Yes, and they're torturing it.
They're torturing a bug, yeah.
But this time, much like him, he's a tortured bug tied by a string that he doesn't even know about. This time, he's a crow flapping around the inside of a desk that he doesn't know about.
Yeah, that was great. So if you could read that scene for me, that would be great.
Okay, I'm going to read it as myself. It's going to be a cold read. You little liars. Rowan Woodward is your classmate, isn't she? Isn't she? That is her desk. And you're the biggest liar on the wall. I am warning you. You tell me another and I'll arrest you myself. That is a promise, miss.
Rose. Sister Rose.
Of course, another plant, Rose.
Another plant.
His delivery of all of that is sublime. Nicolas Cage, exaggerated expressionistic acting, where it is completely an illogical line, a line full of zero logic whatsoever. That especially when he makes that turn is when he goes, "And you're the biggest liar of them all," is so funny. Where he's addressing this crowd of children, then turns to the teacher, "You're the biggest liar of them all." After he's gone through the book and seen Rowan Woodward on there, and this whole thing that everyone is called plants, like Sister Willow, Sister Rose,
Sister Violet, blah,
Sister
blah, blah.
Violet, they're all plants. I think,
of course, another plant.
It's
funniest line maybe ever.
It's almost like this meta line where you're like, oh my God, another person with a freaking plant. Let me get the dumb symbolism of this movie. And I think Nicolas Cage applies the exact cinematic justice that line needs to be read in that way.
It's genius.
It's genius.
I like this line. when he gets to the island and he goes into the cabin for the first time and asks for a room, he says, the name's Malus, Edward Malus. I'd like a room and a meal. Can you swing it? Can you swing it?
Can you swing it?
Can you swing it?
Yeah, yeah, we got a freaking room for you, babe.
Yeah, dude, we got
it. Yeah, come on, babe, pop into the air.
Oh, and then that comes shortly after that, a bee flies in and he swats it with his hand and kills it. And the woman says, why did you do that? And he says, I'm allergic.
Which, therefore, if you're swatting a bee with your bare hand, I can tell you this, I've done this. I have a history of bee allergy in my family. My grandfather was like a Macaulay Culkin style kid. Oh. He had an allergy to bees. And there was a time where me and a young friend of mine, when we were both the same age of 7 years old, we were hanging out around the pond and a bee flew around. And I was scared that my friend, she was going to get stung by this bee. So I did the bravest thing I could muster up and I squashed that bee with my hand. And I'll tell you, the venom perpetrated my entire hand because I had just squished it with a bare hand, not a shoe or anything. And so like I had a swollen hand for weeks.
Oh.
It was hideous.
What was he doing hitting him with his hand then if he's fucking allergic?
And does he have those little EpiPen on him?
He must have 50 EpiPens.
He's like, hey, I can waste them. I can waste an EpiPen.
I don't give a shit.
I don't give a shit, dude. I'm a cop. I've got a good healthcare system. We've got good health insurance. I've got 50 EpiPens in my briefcase.
So the bees is... I don't think the bees is in the original, is it?
No.
No, it's just like harvesting in the original, the crops. This time it's not fruit and like hay and corn and shit like that. It's honey that they make and they're struggling to make honey. And that's what the sacrifice is for.
And I think that makes sense in the 2006 context because, you know, there was that whole thing, the bees are dying and stuff. I think that's quite evocative. I think bees are very evocative. They're dangerous.
It's already been used as horror iconography.
Mr. Candyman.
Yeah. It's got a history of it.
I think that...
Plus, there's a lot you can do there with the like male-female stuff. And the queen is the one that has the power in Beehive and the men are the workers. Obi-Hive,
if you will.
Obi-Hive,
like
baby.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff is in there. It's all implied by it being bees.
Yeah.
And I think that I like all of that. To me, I'm like, that's all really good. And I like how overt that symbolism is. I think that I like horror movies when they like make these big choices like that. And it's like, yeah, it's all symbolism. It's metaphor, but it's also real that's happening in the film. Like no one's going like, oh, this is all a metaphor in there. It's like, no, it's real to everyone in the film. It works that way. And it makes sense for Nicolas Cage to be this frustrated guy that's come into all of this. And I loved all this bee symbolism and how constant it was. And having that he's got this fear of bees because he's allergic of bees, I think works really well. And they bring it back so many times that it is a tremendous disappointment. Because there is one scene in this movie that we are all very familiar with due to one of our favorite short films, Nicolas Cage loses his shit. And it is, of course, the no, not the bees moment.
I think I have a direct quote of it here.
Read that out, please.
Read that out for you if you like. You bitches, not the bees, no, not the bees. Killing me won't bring back the honey. No, not the bees. My eyes.
So that's a very evocative scene performed wonderfully by Cameron James, a wonderful young actor from Australia who is available to act in comedic and dramatic works.
Yeah.
And he...
You can just contact my agent.
Yeah.
I'll put the details
Century,
at the end of the
if you go to like the Century Venues website, it's probably attached
Century
to that.
Artists,
Century Artists. Century Artists, not the venues. Cameras not a venue.
Although I am happy to be a venue, I can rent out my apartment to anyone who needs it for like whatever they want. I won't ask questions.
If you're a swarm of bees and you want to run a show, you can just hop in a camera and do it there. But it is like this really evocative stuff and it builds up to this moment that we know of where he gets like this... during the sacrificial stuff where Nicolas Cage gets this...
Helmet
thing. It looks like a deep sea diver helmet from like the ancient sponge diving days of like the 19th and 18th century. And they like pour the bees into it. He's like screaming around. But in the cut that we saw and the cut that is a theatrical cut, I didn't know about this until we were like looking up to do this movie and screening it for people online in that there was... that is the director's cut. And yeah. That's how it was filmed, was to be presented in that way. But they cut it down to make a PG-13 movie, which is why would you do that for this horror movie?
Yeah, insane.
This, you're not going to get a 13-year-old in to see this movie.
But I guess they're worried they weren't going to get anyone in to see this movie.
Well, they didn't
have
critics.
They must have looked at it and been like, this sucks.
Mm-hmm.
The only people who might come see it are like fucking 15-year-olds.
Who are horny to watch the movie.
So we may as well get them, you know, get like a PG-13 so we can get fucking 14, 15-year-olds mm-hmm. into this movie. And whatever. They'll bring their younger brothers and sisters and yeah. shit.
Or
that was
they'll
the
make
only
their
hope they had.
Yeah.
So they cut out the fucking best bit, the most iconic bit, the bee helmet,
mm-hmm.
which we were so excited to see. And then it's not in it. It's
this
handled
weird
very
thing.
Clumsily as well.
Very clumsily. Like it was like they cut it out that day because you just have the vision of the Wicker Man, which I'm not saying Wicker Man
no.
or Wicked Man because no. it is just the structure that I'm talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, when you talk about the structure, you just call it the Wicker Man.
Because I don't want to confuse people.
Yeah.
Because if I'm trying to throw around all these different terms, I've got to be honest with what they are. It's the Wicker Man.
Yeah.
It's the structure.
Yeah.
And it just kind of cuts around that and has like literally, motherfucker, it's just B-roll. It's just B-roll.
Yeah.
And not the B-roll that we want. B-E-E-roll.
No. We want the B-roll where it's just you put a B helmet on Nick Cage and you let the camera roll.
And they don't show it to us. It's very clumsily done to just show this B-roll where we're hearing him go like, you bitches. I don't even think you hear you bitches. It's just him going, no, not the bees, not the bees.
And then he says, like, killing me won't bring back the honey. You hear that, but
yeah.
it's over the top of this random footage of like...
And instead of it being over the top of some random footage, it should be an over the top moment.
Yes.
Which it is in the freaking short film
That
version.
Was incredibly disappointing to
incredibly.
Not get that moment.
Especially because the film... in a really like over the top way, in a maximalist way that we love Nicolas Cage, it builds up to that moment so well. There's so much bee imagery and bee words being spoken, and like there's so much stuff about the bees building up to that moment for it to be just snaked away from you completely.
Betrayal. I felt betrayed.
I felt betrayed, dude.
I felt absolutely betrayed.
I was betrayed by that moment.
I was so angry.
I was a freaking betrayed baby, dude.
Who's that for?
I call you Pete Holmes, dude.
Who
I'm
is that for?
Baby. Just for you. I knew it would make you laugh. That's why I said it.
Oh, God.
And it's such a bummer because, like, I think that... part of what the problem of this movie, and it is a movie that is hard to watch, literally, in that it's not on any streaming service, let alone your iTunes or Google Plays. This is a movie that's hard to track down. I've got a Blu-ray copy of it that we've watched that is just a theatrical version. I think that they have done such a bad job. And this is a phenomenon that you and I have talked about, especially you talking about with Cats, where they have done such a bad job in embracing the way that this movie should be embraced.
Totally.
They
totally.
Are, in a way, ashamed of this movie or disappointed that people either saw it as like this unintentionally funny or as now that they've said later going like, no, we intended it to be funny and this weird
well,
like
that
this.
That confuses me. Like if, because Neil LaBute and Nick Cage have both come out and said it's a comedy and it was supposed to be funny or like a crazy horror comedy, then why not push it like that, you know?
Having this in a rowdy screening, there have been a few of them. I know Melbourne had one a couple of years ago, Melbourne Film Festival.
Right.
And I think that this movie would be sensational for that. But
I would love to attend one.
They haven't allowed it to be embraced in this way that these so and so called failure of movies, like failure movies and unintentionally funny movies or so bad it's good movies that have found success have been embraced in this way. And they're not allowing it to be done that way. They're very controlling in the way that this movie is seen. And I think that is so bizarre because this should be like a absolute midnight favorite across the board.
It really should be. It's one of those ones that I think we both think is stupid, but that doesn't mean it's a bad viewing experience.
Yes, it is incredibly enjoyable.
It's a very enjoyable thing to watch with a group of people.
Especially like there's so many weird decisions where there's like dreams within dreams that are nightmares,
where he's
having these PTSD flashbacks every now and then where the truck just comes back in sepia tone.
Okay, so the truck... from the start of the movie where it runs over a little girl and that triggers his whole PTSD, he sees visions of the truck probably five times throughout the movie.
Yes.
And not just like, it doesn't just like cut to a flashback of that exact same shot. The truck, or like an imagination version of the truck, just fucking rams through the middle of a scene and kills people at random. I remember when there's that bit where he's looking at the little girl on the ferry and we were joking to each other, like, I bet the truck kills her. And it fucking did. The truck's just on the ferry.
Yeah. And he just has these flashbacks to it. It's like these sepia tone things.
It's crazy.
That's
proof to me that it's deliberate.
Because it happens so many times. And there's one moment where he's like, wakes up. He has a dream where he sees Rowan under the water, and he jumps down and swims to her and grabs her, and he's got like this little dead body in his hands. A quote here from IMDb from that scene where he wakes up from that dream and he's in a dream where the truck comes by and smashes, and then he wakes up again from that because it was a second dream within a dream. And this is the quote as it is on IMDb: Edward Malus waking up from the second dream in a row. God damn it. It's just like, it is ridiculous, this movie, and there's no way that it can't be self-knowing that they're going like, we're making a really fun maximalist horror movie, which is different from the original Wicker Man, which is maybe why it is seen as this shit movie, because you are playing with this kind of beloved iconic classic, this property that has since become known as like this one of the all-time greats of British cinema, and especially British genre cinema. To be playing in that sandbox using these things that are like basically iconic and twisting them in a way, and in a way that's kind of like lower class than what the original movie is.
As in, it has no class.
It has no class. It's
trash.
To make this film that is quite this classic and classy piece of cinema, it's interesting in its own ways, in the ways that it plays with genre and musical and stuff, to just be kind of playing with that in a way that's maximalist and trashy.
So fun.
It's so fun, but I can understand the disrespect of like why people go like, this is the wrong thing to have done. And I get that. I think it is the wrong thing to have done with our property. If this was just like Nicolas Cage in the Cracker Man or whatever, something, and it's like something like that, where it's like him, it's like a new movie,
just another culty thing.
It's informed by the Wicker Man,
or like the Honey Pot.
Yeah, call the Honey Pot, because that's what this is. This is a Honey Pot thing, which is so fucked up in that misogynistic Neil LaBute way, where I think that if they had done that like free from the chains of the Wicker Man, it could have been better. Better for it.
I'm so glad it is what it is.
Same.
I just wish we could see it more easily. I kind of want to, when all this is over, put on a screening of it.
Yeah.
Like for real. We did our online one, which was illegal. I'd like to do one.
We acknowledge that we did.
We acknowledge that we broke the law. But, you know, I think when all this is over, I would like to do it for real, because I think it would be really fun to be in a room full of people watching this insanity. Yeah, especially, I feel very similar. Yeah, exactly. If we got that, I feel very similar about this to the way I feel about the movie Cats, which is that I think that they're both pretty, like, if I were to watch them alone, I'd be depressed, and I'd think they were very bad movies.
Yes.
But with people, it's like,
it's a dream.
A very enjoyable, crazy experience.
Because it keeps you it's like so big and has all these unexpected moments with like those truck flashbacks and stuff. And it's got a bonkers performance from Nicolas Cage, which is probably, along with Vampire's Kiss that we released a few weeks ago, the most memeified, iconic Nicolas Cage performance, in kind of shaping what we understand, or at least how we understood Nicolas Cage 15, 10 years ago, what we understood him to be, in that he was this over-the-top actor that was now making bad movies and constantly making bad movies because he had these tax problems and like had to pay off all these debts. So I think that this film is very representative to all of that.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of become one of his more iconic and well-known movies for that reason.
He sort of seems to like it too. He's talked about it a bit. over the years. There's a quote here from 2012.
Can you please read it in Nicolas Cage?
I'll try. He was asked what roles from his career he would most like to revisit. And he said, I'd like to hook up with one of the great Japanese filmmakers, like the master that made Ringu. And I would like to take the Wicker Man to Japan, except this time, he's a ghost.
And I think that he knows what he's playing with saying something like that.
Yeah, I think so.
Like, I think that is true. He'd love to make a Japanese horror movie.
Yeah.
And this is his most normal horror movie, weirdly enough, is The Wicker Man.
I'd love to see him in a Japanese horror movie.
He'd be excellent.
He's such a huge performer that he really should mainly be working in genre films. Mm.
And he really should be. And I think that him calling attention to Ring and this, it makes sense because they're both like these procedural horror films that are all about the investigation. And I think that there's something about this Nicolas Cage as an investigator who is descending into madness is very attractive. And I think that he is, I'm going to say, I think Nicolas Cage is perfect in this movie.
I think so too.
Because if you have Aaron Eckhart in this movie, I think Aaron Eckhart has a cameo in this film.
Does he?
I think he does. I think he's just in it. He's on the IMDb.
Really? I know James Franco has a tiny.
Oh, we have to talk about
tiny
that.
Tiny cameo.
We have to talk about that.
Aaron Eckhart.
I think if it was like an Aaron Eckhart and this was a straighter, more normal take on this material, it would be so uninteresting.
I just wouldn't watch it. I never would watch it.
Yeah, it would have
nothing. And we were just raving about Eckhart. I mean, he's one of your guys.
He's one of my heroes, one of my guys. I do have pictures of him up in my room that I printed out from the internet on an inkjet printer that I did just blue tack up on my walls. I've been up there for probably since 2007. And when I saw Thank You for Smoking
Yeah.
I just got big Eckhart pictures.
Yeah. You love him.
I love Thank You for Smoking. Maria Bello. Yeah. David Koechner.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, is in that. And Rachel Dawes herself.
Oh, yeah. Katie Holmes.
Katie Holmes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, Vermont would like to thank you for the quality of their high cheddar cheese or whatever that line is. As said by William H. Macy. Bill Macy, great work.
It's a great film. He's a great actor. But if he was in this movie, there's no chance in hell I would ever have watched it.
Yeah, it is a great film.
Did you know that, look at this, that Winona Ryder turned down the role of Willow in this movie? Do you know why?
Why?
It says here, because she hated the script.
Imagine getting that back. You're like, God, we got to get Winona to play Willow. She'd be perfect. She's so ephemeral and just like, she's got those big eyes that look perfect in this. She's from Sleepy Hollow. This has got a Sleepy Hollow vibe about it. We got to get her that script. And she can get word back from the agent. Oh, yeah, bad news. Winona doesn't want to do it. Oh, damn. Did she at least say why? Yeah, she hated the script.
She hated the script. Oh, also, why is that trivia?
I mean, it is trivial, I guess, in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, that's true.
Another piece of trivia for this movie is the film is dedicated to late musician Johnny Ramone, who introduced Nicolas Cage to Robin Hardy's original The Wicker Man.
Crazy.
So one of the Ramones really did introduce Nicolas Cage to this Wicker Man, which I guess brought about this movie in a way. So the last thing that you see is dedicated to Johnny Ramone.
Very, very bizarre ending to that movie. A movie that is already out there and fucking insane. Yeah.
To have that twist. The only other time that I've had that is I watched the documentary about a tribe called Quest.
Mm.
Great movie. It's so interesting. Like one of my favorite music groups. Love Tribe Called Quest. And it's this great documentary that kind of shows like throughout their entire career, like the power struggles within the group and stuff like that. And there is this great charting their entire career. And then as soon as the film ends, the credit comes up, directed by Michael Rapaport. And I'm just like, what? What? This whole thing that I just watched was Michael Rapaport's work?
Do you know Becky got into a fight with Michael Rapaport?
I do.
Isn't that crazy?
So weird.
Yeah. She was on a bill with him because he does stand-up.
Mm.
And he was like being rude to her or something, and they had an argument.
That's so bizarre. It's like he was the cop on Friends that Phoebe dated. He's in lots of great movies. He's in Bamboozled. He's in Copland.
And he's in Higher Learning. And
Higher
stuff.
Learning, yeah. And he makes a freaking great Tribe Called Quest movie. And then he's fighting with Becky Lucas on a stand-up bill.
Insane. Such a fucking weird world that we live in. But yeah, Michael Rapaport is cool. He's cool. I wish he directed this movie.
That would be even better if it's like For the Love of Johnny Ramone and then directed by Michael Rapaport. And Robin Hardy sued, so he's unable to be available on this. Can I tell you who were... We talked about Aaron Eckhart being the lead of this movie. There are two people that were considered for this that I think would work, but it would be a smaller movie and more in line with, for both of them, different things. One of them is Liam Neeson. And I think this is around a little bit before Taken. So this would be kind of, in this way, kicking off Liam Neeson's like second act of career, which is old man action movies. I feel like it's kind of kicking off in that area if he does this. And I can see what that movie is. I can see his performance in it. But the other star was Robert Carlyle, which I think is bringing it more to that Edward Woodward thing.
I love Robert Carlyle.
Yeah. Such a string beanus of a man.
Yeah, he's crazy. He's one of those actors who's so tiny and petite. He's petite. I'd call him petite.
He's a petite and cup yet, actor.
As Begbie in Trainspotting, terrifying.
Terrifying.
Utterly terrifying.
As Rumpelstiltskin in Once Upon a Time, terrifying.
Terrifying as fuck. As that fuck. Stripper in The Full Monty, scary. I kept so scary. Wondering if he was going to reveal his fucking mound.
Yeah, his stringy mound.
I thought he'd have this like long, thin lump that just pops out at some point.
Because that's the thing about The Full Monty. You're like, well, at least I'm going to know what all these guys like Tom Wilkinson, Schwartz is going to look like. And then at the end where it just you see from behind when they throw the hats off.
Yeah.
And it's like,
that's scary.
They don't show you. And I'm like, well, now I still don't know. I watch this whole freaking movie to find out what these five pigs looked like naked. Don't even see it. I thought I'd be crossing off like five great actors on my list, but
thank God that movie exists because it gave us the beautiful song "You Can Leave Your Hat On," which didn't exist before it.
And you could leave your hat on. They decided not to. They didn't even show us.
I actually have not seen that movie for so long, and now I'm really keen to watch it.
Yeah, same. I'm going to watch The Commitments and The Full Monty tonight.
Oh, The Commitments. That was the fake band. That was Mustang Sally.
Yeah, Mustang Sally, and they released a whole album after the movie
and
as
that
well.
Song was a hit,
and
it was just like by some fake band.
Yeah, that's some like Irish actors. Like fucking,
that's like if like when Airheads came out, the song that Brendan Fraser and Adam Sandler play became a hit all around the globe.
And they're like, we got to get them together to make a whole nother album.
It's really, truly insane to me that the Mustang Sally band is fake. I find that so crazy.
Oh,
because it's a standard.
It's a standard now.
It's
Mustang
like,
Salad. People will sing it on like Idol when they're auditioning.
Yeah, and it's like you're singing a fucking joke song. It's by a fake band. It's like the Monkees. Actually, yeah, let's watch The Commitments and The Full Monty.
And then Wicker Man.
And then Billy Elliot.
And then Billy Elliot.
Yeah.
And then just try and guess what they all look like naked. Oh, gosh. This movie is insane. And I think that one of the strangest things is after the movie, we have, after like the climax of the film where we see him be put into the Wicker Man and be burned to create a new harvest or whatever.
Don't really understand
what the fuck is
doesn't really on. Make sense.
Doesn't really make sense. And then it cuts back to the good old United States of America in the truest sense where we're at like a nightclub.
Yeah.
And then we have Lily Sobieski's character and Willow Woodward. Kate Behan. By the way, his name is Edward. Her name is Woodward. Good on you. You've honored the original movie. That's all you needed to do.
That's the coolest thing that they've ever done.
That, by the way, is really, that's touching that they did that.
That made me tear up.
When I heard her say Rowan Woodward and I realized that his name was Edward, I shed a tear.
Yeah. I cried so hard. I immediately started bawling my eyes out.
You're honoring Edward Woodward in the most honorable way. And I'm so excited and proud of that. Of course, Edward Woodward at the time was not dead or anything. So so he got to live to see it, thankfully. He got to live to see that. But we've got the Kate Bean character, Lily Sobieski character. Yeah. They're at this club and they're trying to create another honeypot where they string up.
They're trying to lure a couple of dudes to the island.
Mm-hmm. Lure a couple of dudes to impregnate them so then later on they can fake that daughter disappearance, lure them out to the island and sacrifice them. And who should it be? None other than the freaking knob goblin himself, James Franco.
Mm-hmm. And someone else.
Some other fella. Not sure who it was.
Yeah, I don't even... I just...
Not even on the IMDb credit. They don't even have a credit, dude.
No credit for them. But yeah, it's Franco and some fucking Michael Rapaport motherfucker.
Yeah, might be Michael Rapaport.
Oh, it's Jason Ritter.
Oh, that's right. It's Jason Ritter.
Yes.
From Three's Company's Son.
Three's Company's Son.
Yeah. He was born from a threesome, I understand.
Jason Ritter and James Franco, two of Hollywood's most iconic hunks.
Yes, they were part of the Slack Pack, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
They're both technically part of the Slack Pack by guess virtue of this movie.
Yeah, so this two, we got two Slack Packers hanging out at the bar and they spot these two absolute stunners from across the bar and they start talking to them. And then we realize that they are, in fact, being lured to the island.
Yeah.
It's one of those little moments that could be a 20-second gag at the end of a movie. Mm-hmm. But instead, it is a 6-minute scene.
And it is an odd choice that it's James Franco.
Yeah, I guess we're supposed to feel something, right? We're supposed to go, Spider-Man, if they take stars, then Who else is safe?
If
they can take stars.
They can take gorgeous stars like the guy that played James Dean on that TV movie a couple of years
and
ago.
And Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah,
and
Freaks and Geeks.
John Ritter's son.
And the son of the iconic star John Ritter, who I don't think had died yet.
Then, like, who's next? No one is safe.
Josh Mostel.
Yeah, what other slack packers could they take?
Yeah, they could take anyone.
And that's probably what we're supposed to think about at the end. Yeah.
And then who's next after Jay Baruchel? Probably me.
Rogan?
They could get Rogan.
Seth Rogan? And while they're there, they might get Joe Rogan.
They might get Craig Robinson. That would suck if they got Craig Robinson and killed him.
Clark Duke?
Dude, not Clark Duke. Not Michael and Clark, dude. My favorite web series, Clark and Michael.
I loved that.
Same.
Everyone should watch Clark and Michael. I bet it sucks, but I loved it. 15
years
ago. It
was Clark Duke and Michael Cera, the two hottest slack packers at that time.
Yeah, so that's the way the movie ends. It's like a little tease to us back home to say, look, this shit is going to go on forever. This is real. This is real life. It's happening. It's you can't hide from it.
It's coming to you. It's coming to you in your clubs. Yeah. You could be next if you don't watch out.
Don't trust women because they are coming for you and they are trying to lure you to a cult where they cut your tongue out, fuck you only for babies.
Mm-hmm. Burn you alive.
Burn you alive.
Because they got to get their honey back, okay? It's a honeypot trap and you've been caught by it.
And I took that message to heart. Mm-hmm. I immediately came home, divorced my wife.
Yeah. And you grew the lump back out.
Yeah. I'm growing out my lump at the moment. Because we have to trim.
You have to trim the lump down.
You have to trim your lump back.
You shave the lump down.
Yeah, so I'm growing it out. So thanks for listening to our Nick Cage series.
What have we learned about Nicolas Cage?
That we think he's... I mean, I think he's great. Mm. What do you think?
I think he's excellent. And I think this is, like I said before, it's been this really interesting way to see him where we're directly comparing what another actor has done with this role and what he is doing with it. I think it is... It's been a fascinating way to look at him because, you know, usually... As we've been doing on the Patreon podcast on Total Respect, we just did an episode where we looked at four interesting, iconic performances by Nicolas Cage. And seeing those without this kind of context, where we're directly comparing to how another actor has done, is great because that's like what everyone does. That's how we see Nicolas Cage. But doing it in this way, it's so interesting because you look at what Edward Woodward does, and it's not a small performance either. He is quite big in it and is charged in these ways, but it's completely different to the way Cage is so expressionistic. It really highlighted for me that idea of Nicolas Cage as an expressionistic actor.
Totally. And I think I've always enjoyed him, but I've kind of enjoyed making fun of him as well. But I reckon I've sort of lost I've lost the making fun of him part of it.
Mm.
From doing this, I've actually come all the way around to... I actually find him incredibly enjoyable.
Yes.
I've never not enjoyed a performance of his. And even though he's big and makes these crazy, outlandish decisions, I like them.
Mm, I agree.
I think that it's interesting and it's cool to watch someone do something interesting with their career rather than just being a fucking slack packer.
Yeah, or just like doing the same prestige movies over and over again. Like you see actors get trapped in those and then have to escape and by doing something fun. Like people like Ralph Fiennes, who made his big start doing stuff like Schindler's List and then from then on being in lots and lots of prestige movies for a decade and then only being able to break out of it with something like In Bruges and then has gone on to have more interesting career from that, doing that. Whereas Nicolas Cage has never been tied down to doing one thing apart from shitty B movies in like Bulgaria to pay off like debtors and stuff and creditors.
Yeah.
And I think that he makes the craft of acting much richer for it.
It's like what Ethan Hawke said. He's the only guy to have brought something new to the craft of acting in the last 100 years. Don't know if that's true, but it's definitely something that I am going to keep saying.
And I trust Ethan Hawke. He is a great music historian, an even better actor, and pretty good director.
Ethan Hawke is the slightly less crazy Nick Cage, I think, in that he has made just as many dog shit straight-to-video movies.
And then so many interesting auteur movies. Yep. I think I love Ethan Hawke.
Yeah, same.
You got to watch this movie that he directed. I'll find
the cowboy one.
No, it's this one called Blaze, and it's about this country folk singer called Blaze, and it's a biographical film. It's wonderful. It's got Alia Shawkat in it, and it's really, really good. Cool. So that's as far as her reboot goes. We probably will never talk about that movie on here, but there's a little free recommendation for you. It's called Blaze.
Cool. Thanks so much for joining us on our 100 episode spectacular in the cage. We've had a lot of fun in the cage with you. It is now time to leave the cage.
Almost.
You're right. We're not quite out yet.
We have decided that what our next mega series will be.
Mm.
And it's about another iconic Italian-American movie star.
If you had to describe his talent level, how would you describe it?
I would have to describe it as wickedly talented.
Mm.
And Cameron, are there other people like him out there?
No.
If you were to say he's one, would you say he's the only?
Where are you leading?
Well, he's one and only. He's wickedly talented, the one and only megastar of cinema, John Travolta.
Yeah.
We have decided that we are moving straight from Nicolas Cage to a mega series about the reboots and remakes of Jonathan Travolta.
Oh, I can't wait it. I can't wait to watch it. The chicks will cream. It's going to be so much fun.
It's going to be electrifying.
Yeah.
And that is what we're doing next. And to do that, we have chosen a particular movie that features both of those actors that will allow us to move off from Nicolas Cage and face John Travolta. So that will be coming out next week. I don't want to say what it is.
I don't want you to say what it is either.
I want it to be a surprise in your feed.
I want to woo the audience with this surprising feature film.
And if you're on the John, you're going to shit when you find out what the movie that we're going to be doing next week is.
Yeah.
And if you're Prince, you might be saying, but the doves are crying. They're not just flying when you find out about it.
Either way, it's very exciting. I can't wait for you guys to see it. And I can't wait to watch it again. It's it's one of the greatest bits of cinema.
It is a great bit. It's a great bit of cinema. And this is one of the greatest bits of podcasting, I would say. And that's not revealing what that will be. But we've got some movies that we've wanted to do on this podcast for a really long time. Mm. Some interesting rip-offs as well.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to start with a rip-off. And this is a big one as far as Travolta goes, as far as musical cinema goes.
Mm.
We're kicking off this mega series after next week's secret movie episode. It's a secret cinema release that we're going to be doing next week. The movie after that, we're going to be doing the all-time classic musical Grease, starring John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John.
And when you say Grease, of course, you don't mean the nation.
The homeland. I'm not talking about the homeland. The motherland. I'm talking about my favorite drink, Grease. We're going to be talking about Grease. And, you know, there's not an actual direct remake of Grease, is there? No.
No, not direct remake, but there is something that comes to mind to me as a bit of a ripoff, mm-hmm. I'd say.
And what is that freaking movie, baby?
It's a Disney flick.
Mm-hmm.
It stars the funniest comedian of all time.
Yes.
Zac Efron.
Zac Efron, one of the funniest slackpackers that there could be.
Of course, we're talking about High School Musical.
We are going to be comparing Grease and High School Musical to kick off our John Travolta series. There's going to be other films in there, like obviously Taking a Pelham 1-2-3, which is a classic 1970s film starring Walter Matthau, mm-hmm. and then a Tony Scott remake starring Denzel Washington and Jonathan Travolta. And then we're going to be talking about Blow Up and Blow Out, a wonderful mega pairing of all time. And of course, a movie we've wanted to talk about forever, probably on this podcast, directed by one of our heroes. The movie is Hairspray, John Waters' Hairspray, followed up by the John Travolta in drag musical, where he takes on the iconic performance by Divine.
Mm.
I'm really excited to talk about those. I'm excited to talk about John Waters finally on this podcast as well.
I'm excited to talk about John Travolta.
He is iconic.
He's iconic. He's interesting. He's cool. Mm-hmm. He's made some crazy choices throughout his life.
Yeah. A lot of people call him the comeback kid.
Yeah. Don't call it a comeback.
Because he never left.
That's what I say.
And if you want to hear more from us, you can head over to patreon.com/totalreboot and sign up for just $5 a month. You get access to an entire bonus podcast where we have done many, many episodes, including a Q&A recently. And most recently, we are delving into some of our favorite Nicolas Cage performances that fall outside of this mini-series. We did a part one where we talked mainly about this insane movie called Deadfall, which is heavily featured in our favorite short film, Nicolas Cage Loses His Shit. Yeah. And yeah. I would say definitely listen to that episode because we talk about the most wild, fucking weird Nicolas Cage performance.
Do you know, it's since talking about that movie, which I think we both hated but mm-hmm. were a bit obsessed with, I want to watch it again.
Yeah.
Because after we talked about it, I was like, actually, maybe it is, maybe I'm crazy or maybe it's actually secretly a piece of genius.
I don't think it is. It's made by Coppola. It's Cage Coppola, his brother.
Yeah.
And it has stuck with me as well.
It's stuck with me.
It's really stuck with me.
Because part of it feels like we dreamt it.
Part of it, that movie may as well be freaking Greg Kinnear and I'm Matt Damon because it's stuck on me.
Oh, God. Okay. Follow Alexi on Instagram and Twitter at This Is Alexi.
Follow Cameron on Instagram and Twitter at I Am Cameron James.
Yeah.
We are working on a very cool project that will be coming towards you very soon in the next few months, mm-hmm. I'd say. Mm-hmm. So keep on the lookout for that and catch up with Finding Drago. That's a little hint that I'll give you towards that.
Yeah, we don't want to give too much away, but
make sure you subscribe to that stream.
Check out Finding Drago and subscribe to that stream.
Be subscribed to that freaking
stream. I don't want
to
give anything away, but yeah.
Also, this helps us out quite a bit. We haven't given this a plug for quite some time, but if you listen to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or iTunes or whatever, if you give this 5 stars and give us a little review, that helps us out quite a bit because we have been doing quite well in the charts. And someone left us a really nice review. I don't normally check this, but I checked it the other day. And I'm going to read you this review because I think it will make you very happy, Cameron.
Hmm.
This is from V. Thurston via Apple Podcasts in Australia. Honestly, listening to two people who obviously love each other so much is the highlight of my week. And that made me so happy. And especially now we've been celebrating 100 episodes.
Yeah.
That felt that is so
really
nice.
That is really nice. That was me who wrote that.
Okay. Well, you know, I like it a bit less now, but... But if you can give us a 5-star review, that really helps us out.
Yeah, that would be lovely. And we'll love you mm-hmm. very much.
We will.
So join us next week where we... go off of Nicolas Cage mm-hmm. and face John Travolta.
And it will be a bonus episode that we have not said the name of a movie for yet. But I will say that it is a movie that features both of them.
Yeah. So do a little detective work. Yeah. And
it's more fun if you try to solve the mystery yourself.
Try to figure it out. Yeah. You guys try to figure it out.
But don't think too obviously. We are being coy for a reason.